I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
John, as I mentioned in the episode with Paul Levinson, there is so much going on right now. It's overwhelming to a certain degree. You know, just in a quick recap, we have The Mandalorian, we have Disney Plus launching, we have Jedi Fallen Order, we have Dragon Prince Season 3.
Yeah.
We have The Witcher and The Expanse coming in December. We have Crisis coming in December. We have Doctor Who coming back on New Year's Day. I mean, there's just so much going on. That's not even looking at, like, the new Star Wars movies coming out in December. It's just, there's so much going on. It's a great time to be a functional nerd, in my opinion. It's overwhelming.
Yeah, it's great because I've gotten so picky about what I watch, and it's because you can be that picky. Because it's like, well, I don't necessarily want to, like, launch into watching this season of this show because it's, you know, I'm okay with it. But, well, you know, new season of Dragon Prince is coming, so I love that. So I'll just wait a day and watch that. And it's like, oh, the new episode of The Mandalorian is up. I'll watch that now. And it's like, oh, you know, Clone Wars, you know, season is coming a couple months down the line. Or there's just for people that, particularly like genre things, there's so much there. And that's not even getting into all the good documentaries that are out there now, and how niche like some of those docs are. You know, I think we talked about the comic book ones a couple weeks ago, the Image Comics one. Did you watch that one? Did we talk about that one?
No, we talked about it. I haven't watched it. Oh, that even reminds me. The Toys That Made Us dropped a new season.
Yeah, and I didn't watch last season yet. So, like, that's how it all works. Yeah, there's so much. You know, before we get into it, I did want to talk about this with the docs for a second, because I had a thought about it as I was watching that Image one, and then there was also one, I think, made by the same people, about Chris Claremont and his run on the X-Men, and how he, even though he didn't create those characters,
I saw that's out there. I didn't watch it, but I saw it.
That's good too. And you know, essentially he made the X-Men what they were, obviously, you know, even though I forget who are the initial creators. I don't know if Stan Lee is one of them, and you know, the classic Marvel guys that created everybody, it was really Claremont who made that the X-Men what they became later on. I enjoyed both those docs, and I've enjoyed a lot of music docs that I've watched lately. You can tell they're relatively low budget, but that's what I kind of love too, because I thought, well, you know what? We've talked a lot about this in the past about with technology being what it is, you know, you don't have to go to a film school to learn how to make a documentary. If you invest in good enough gear, like you can get a pretty good camera, and you know, if you have Final Cut Pro or whatever editing software, it's reasonable to purchase those things, and you can make yourself a doc on your favorite subject. Not to take away from people who are really artists and do, because what I'm saying is you can really tell the difference between like the really high quality, higher budget docs and the lower ones. But I tend to watch a lot of the lower budget docs because they're specific niche things that I'm into, about like Image Comics. There's not going to be a super high end doc about that, but there'll be a low budget one, and it'll give you the same information. It just may not be shot as well or edited as well. I love that. And the other thought I had about it was, I wonder how many of those, because I think you posted about this with Kickstarters, and I think you were talking about that in terms of role-playing games and buying. I feel like either you or one of our patrons posted about, I think, some crazy dice or something that were like a Kickstarter, and it was like, I don't know, you spent $100 on a pair of dice that were made out of some weird material or something. I don't know.
Probably
if that
the
was
metal
your
ones.
Yeah, I got to thinking about those docs and Kickstarter, because I was thinking, like, I wonder how many of these docs that I've watched were Kickstarters. You know what I mean? Like, because they are so niche and they are kind of lower budget. I wonder how many of these maybe started their life that way. I hadn't thought about it in a while.
Have you seen there's like the production company that is crowdsourced that Jay and Silent Bob, Kevin Smith and Jay.
Yeah, Jason Mewes, yeah.
Thank you, Jason Mewes, that they're part of. And you can actually be part of that. And then you also, not only do you financially help, but you also get to help, I guess, pick the projects that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a completely crowdsourced production studio, basically to create movies and documentaries and stuff like that. So there is something out there like that. I will say with Kickstarter, and it's kind of funny because I just sort of had this conversation. Giles from Beyond the Trope, and he has a friend, Jeremy, and they invited me over to play a game. So I went over to, and Jeremy doesn't live that far from me, so I went over and played a game. And Jeremy is the reason, and I told him this, I'm like, you're the reason, God damn it, that I backed Seventh Continent on Kickstarter, because I went over to Jeremy's house, this is a long time ago, and to play this game, and I'm like, holy crap, this is the coolest game I've ever played. And Seventh Continent is it's essentially a tile game. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but it's a board game, but there's no board, there's tiles. And you put down a starting tile, and then based on the decisions of the group as to which direction you go, you pull a numbered card and you set that down. And that starts to fill out the island that you're on, the continent. And every decision you make pulls out a different card. So it's very replayable, because you make a different decision at some point, or if a different outcome happens, it's a different card that comes out. One time you might find a tunnel that goes down into the earth. The next time you might find a creature and kill it, which reveals, you know, like a key that opens a lock that takes you in a different direction. So there's lots of different things that happen in this game based on your decision. So it's really, really very replayable. So that got me to go to Kickstarter to find it. And it turns out they were doing another a re-release, essentially a second edition, because they had done so well with the first, and they were doing an expansion. So I backed that on Kickstarter. Well, that starts the flood from Kickstarter. So then I get an email. It's like, the Elder Dice Kickstarter is happening, and these are the coolest dice. And I click on it, and like, holy crap. If you're a role player, dice are really important to you for a lot of different reasons. And you don't just have one set of dice. The reason you don't have one set is because you will go to a game, you will roll those die, and they will fuck you. And you'll sit there and go, oh my God, they're cursed. You will put them in a bag, you'll put them away somewhere, because you can't throw them away and you can't give them away. But you will put them away and you'll get another set. And so it's almost like guitars. Before you know it, you've got five sets or more.
Mm-hmm.
And so this Kickstarter hits, and it's Elder Dice, and they look really, really cool. And for just X amount of dollars, you can get three different sets, three different colors, plus all this bonus stuff. Oh, they're going to send you, you know, 10 extra six-sided die per color. And they're going to send you a playing mat that you could do stuff with, because it's, you know, there's a game. And you can do this and you can do that, and they're going to send you extra blah, 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 blah. And before you know it, you're like, oh my God, I have to have these. And you back that. And then you get another thing, and it's like Brandon Sanderson has a board game out based on his Steelheart books. It's called, what's it called? The Reckoners. Oh my God, I have to have that. So I back that on Kickstarter. Oh, I've got to get that. And then something else comes up, you know, and you're like, oh my God. And before you realize it, you are backing all these things on Kickstarter, and you're spending all this money, and you're like, huh, I can't buy lunch this week. So
did you read I'm sorry, finish your thoughts. Yeah.
No, so I've had to block Kickstarter in my inbox.
Ah,
because there's so many cool things. The other thing I started getting, it's like when I sign up for Kickstarter, it says, oh, you have a friend on Kickstarter. His name is Lou Anders. Would you like to follow Lou Anders on Kickstarter? Oh, sure. Why not? So I follow Lou Anders. Suddenly I start getting Lou Anders back this, Lou Anders back that, Lou Anders back this game. And I'm like, that looks so cool. I want that. Oh my God. It gets worse. It's the worst rabbit hole you could possibly go down for our age group for spending money on cool things that we could never afford as a kid that are suddenly exploding. You know, big, expansive role-playing games and board games and dice. Yeah, I remember going to Game Preserve with my friends and in middle school and high school. And just staring at these dice that I could not buy because I didn't have the money. They were too expensive. And I'm just using the cheap little red die that you fill in the numbers with the white crayon that you got in the red box of Dungeons & Dragons. Because that's all I could afford. And now it's like, I can drop $25 for a pair or a set of really cool role-playing dice. Sure, I can do that. I have the money for that. No, I don't.
Not when you keep doing it, right?
No.
If you did it once, it's fine. But if you're buying 10 sets of dice, then it's like it adds up pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really quick.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I wanted before? Because I kind of you're talking about all the Kickstarter stuff and we were talking about docs. So that brings up kind of two of our patrons. I promised last episode that I'd read the rest of our patrons who put picks of the week, even though we don't normally do picks of the week on our Just the Two of Us episodes. I do want to read the two picks of the week, the two other picks of the week that we have here on our Facebook patrons only page. Sure. The first is by JT Evans, who I know is into a lot of the role-playing games and stuff. He didn't pick a role-playing game, but he did the... he picked the upcoming, so I guess he hasn't watched it yet. I guess he's just mostly excited about the trailer, but Netflix series called V-Wars. He heard lots of cool things about it, and the trailer's really good. So that's quite a bit of character drama, not just vampires versus humans kind of thing. So that
And I wasn't sure, is that
V-Wars.
A movie or a series?
I don't know. He says series here, so okay. I guess it's going to be a series. So that is JT Evans' pick this week. JT, thank you for putting that pick. And our other pick is by Stace Johnson, and he is picking the Netflix remastered Devil at the Crossroads documentary about Robert Johnson. It has a wide range of interviewees, some reliable and some less so, but full of personality, and explains some of the reasons that Johnson is so well-respected by blues musicians, despite his music sounding simple by today's standards. And I believe you chimed in on this one too, Patrick, about Stace Johnson's pick.
I watched that, yes.
Yeah.
That is such a, that's a legend, right?
Of course.
It's a legend. And it's influenced so many other things. There was the, I don't know if you remember the movie with Ralph Macchio.
Oh yeah, of course.
Back in the day. And you know, yeah. he's gonna be the blues player. And was it Steve Vai that was actually
the
guitar?
It was definitely Steve Vai who was the devil, yes.
But he was also anytime they showed him playing guitar, it was actually Steve Vai playing guitar.
Who else I think? Well, maybe some of the time. I think there was a guy, I want to say his name is Arlen Roth. So Arlen Roth played like the blues stuff, I believe. Mm. I'd have to look it up to make sure, but I'm almost certain that Arlen Roth did a lot of like these instructional videos back in the 80s and early 90s, like how to play slide guitar and how to play this kind of thing and how to do that. So he had like pretty good career doing that, but I guess he was also a consultant for things like that, and he was on that movie. So he was sort of the consultant that did all the guitar stuff, and I think it might be him playing all like the bluesy things, and then Steve Vai did the devil stuff. But what's sort of funny about that, and I don't know if I've actually watched that whole movie beginning to end, it kind of like that movie kind of shits on its own point at the end, because they're doing this whole duel versus Steve Vai's like crazy metal flashy thing, and then Ralph Macchio playing slide guitar and the blues at the end. Like Ralph Macchio sort of wins the duel, if I'm remembering correctly, by sort of abandoning his slide stuff and doing some crazy like metal sounding arpeggio at the end anyway. And it's like, you kind of just shit on your own point there.
It's been so long since I've seen that. I don't remember the ending of it.
Yeah. I'd have to look at it. It probably doesn't hold up very well, but I doubt it does.
Yeah.
But that is, obviously that's sort of, even though it's blues lore, it's become rock lore too, you know, sure. The whole selling your soul to the devil. And I will kind of say to Stace's point that he said, his music sounding simple. I would agree that it sounds simple in that all those recordings, those Robert Johnson recordings, were done like in a hotel room with like one microphone in like 1930 or whenever
yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
So by recording standards, it's simple. And I always had it in my mind that that was sort of simple music as well. When I did get into blues stuff 10 years ago, and I got into a lot of those acoustic blues guys like Robert Johnson and Blind Willie McTell and all these kind of players, Robert Johnson's playing is very sophisticated.
Yeah.
It is not him just going, like he is doing some crazy finger picking stuff and playing like two or three parts at the same time. It is, the guitar playing is, I would argue, is not simple. It is quite sophisticated because it's by himself. He doesn't have a bass player and a drummer there. He's doing everything on a guitar.
Right. And they kind of cover this a little bit in the documentary. Because they talk about the fact that he, and part of the reason that the legend swelled up around him is because he went out and he would play live and he wasn't really very good.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went away for a while. And when he came back, he was excellent.
Yeah.
He was so good. And that's part of the legend. Like, what did he do? How did he do that? Like, how did he go out and... And so, you know, that's part of it. The other part is a lot of people talk about what you're talking about, the different parts that he was playing and how sophisticated it was. And one thing that they point out is that he had really long fingers.
Mm.
So he was able, and he was also able to kind of wrap his whole hand around the fretboard and bring his thumb around and do some things that other people really struggled to do.
Yeah.
So it was a technique thing.
Yeah, Hendrix did the same thing. Hendrix would often, when you hear Hendrix do, I may not be exactly right with this, but when he would do more of a chordal thing, not like a crazy soloing thing, but something like Little Wing, I believe this is the technique he's using. He would, because again, Hendrix had very long fingers and very big hands too. He would wrap his thumb around and he would fret bass notes on the E string with his thumb and then use the other four fingers to do the various chords and little fills mm-hmm. and things like that. So I think Stevie Ray might have done that too, if I recall, because Stevie Ray was really influenced by Hendrix, obviously. So I think Stevie Ray did that technique as well, because I'm pretty sure Stevie had some pretty damn big hands himself. So it's weird because that's so anti quote unquote good guitar technique to like get your thumb around that. Like you should really have your thumb in the middle. For people like me, I have very small hands, so there's no way I can do that. If I fretted a note on the E string with my thumb, I don't even think I could like reach my other fingers around the neck to fret anything. So it wouldn't work for me. You would definitely need to do that. But I haven't watched that doc yet, but I love me a good music doc. And I would certainly give myself some notes. So Stace, thanks for picking that, because I'm probably going to go check that out now.
And to finish the thought about the legend, you know, that Robert Johnson and the legend has influenced so many different things. We talked about that movie. The music has influenced, you know, it influenced B.B. King. It influenced so many blues players who came after. It influenced Eric Clapton. He actually did a album that was all covers of Robert Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Just mm-hmm. a few years mm-hmm. ago.
Yeah.
The legend of the Crossroads has kind of become part of the American mythology.
Yes, definitely.
It's a huge influence in the show Supernatural in the early seasons.
Oh, okay.
Because they basically have, you know, you can go to the Crossroads and you can bury your mojo bag and a demon will come to make a deal with you.
Mm.
So, you know, there were some really bad deals that the boys made, those idiots. That's part of that. And it's also been part of a lot of other stuff. So it's just, like I said, I think it's just American mythology at this point.
I'm really glad that you brought that up. We were talking during our last Just the Two of Us episode, and then we ended up having sort of conversations about it. And some of our patrons responded or wrote posts about it in the Facebook group about how a lot of people did give us some nice positive feedback about that episode and how we sort of refer to it as the functional nerdiest of the functional nerds episodes. And I'm glad to get that feedback from our listeners as well, and I'm glad many of them enjoyed it. But I'm glad you brought that up with Supernatural, because I think this is what I love about doing the show, and what I love about genre and all this. Because sometimes I think like, oh, all right, so there's like the books we read and there's the TV shows we watch, and then Patrick and I are both into music, but maybe that's not really that connected. And I love when you can find these connections, because I think it's there. So, you know, we're talking about a seemingly unrelated thing in a documentary about a blues musician, and you tie it right back to Supernatural, and it's like, oh yeah, because that's how culture works. Like, these things do influence each other, and I love those kinds of connections. So I'm happy that you brought that up there.
I believe they even had a Robert Johnson episode.
You'd have to, right? I mean,
yeah, they ended up doing something like that, because that's when they introduced the idea of hellhounds into the supernatural world.
Cool.
Because, cool, you know, that's one of the songs he was talking, you know, like, and he perpetuated the legend of the Crossroads, Robert Johnson did, with one of his songs, which is something about being chased by hellhounds and feeling their breath on his heels or something like that. So that, again, got translated into an episode of Supernatural.
Cool. And, you know, with the blues thing, and, you know, for me, playing bass now and playing a lot of blues, is because a lot of, you know, you're talking about American mythology. You know, the blues is kind of the heart of American music, I think.
Oh, God,
because
yes.
It's essentially the basis for everything that came after it. Like, yeah, you could say with certain modern music, there's not much blues in it anymore. But in terms of the development of what we can call American music, it's the base. You can't escape the blues, even if you don't think you like the blues. If you like any sort of American form of music, or music that's influenced by American music, blues is there. It's, you know, obviously in this sort of traditional straight blues forms, but obviously in jazz and in country music and in folk music and Americana and later on rock and roll. And then that morphs into metal, and there's still like a blues thing. And so it's all there. And I think that's, you know, there's something a bit philosophical about it, because again, we could talk about the blues as being a simple form, but the more you kind of listen to it and study it and perhaps play it, you realize, yes, it can be simple, but there's always something new to discover, either in listening to it or in playing it. You can approach a traditional 12-bar blues form and play it differently every time and take a different approach on it every time. And I think that is one of the reasons why it still holds up. You can still listen to Robert Johnson. You can still listen to old jazz records and old country records and things. That form is sturdy, and a lot can be built on top of it, and has been. And that's why it still holds up, I think. So,
you know, there, I forget who originally wrote the song, but it's been covered so many different times. I want to say that, oh gosh, I think B.B. King covered it at one point. I think, who am I thinking? Albert, is it Albert Collins? Covered it.
Well, there's Albert King and there's Albert Collins.
It might have been Albert King. They covered this song, and it's basically, the line in the song is, jazz and blues had a baby, and they called the baby rock and roll.
Yeah.
And if you're going back to roots, this is, you know, and we can tie this into the documentaries. I keep talking about the country music documentary by Ken Burns, the blues documentaries that I've seen. You know, they all talk about the same kind of catalyst and the genesis of all these different distinctly American music forms, being, you know, slavery, being gospel music, being just the things that people were singing to get them through the day, and, you know, from those forms, you got blues coming up in the black communities and the African American communities. You've got, you know, country music kind of coming up in the poor white Southern communities. And there's a lot of overlap between them and just how they kind of grew over time and just became the things that we know today. But they're very distinctly American.
Yeah.
Because they were born here. And I forget what it was. Someone was talking about the fact that the things that are being sung about in blues are also the things that are being sung about in that early country music.
Oh yeah.
It's just, you know, because of the segregation and how our society was so separated at the time, you know, you had the black communities and the African American, they're singing the blues, and you had the white community singing the country music, but it's the same message, it's the same problems at the heart. You know, yeah. it's the same concepts, and you can see those similarities if you go back and look and listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that reminds me of, you know, you mentioned Ken Burns, and obviously he's the master documentarian, you know, right? And he's been doing it for a million years, and he's done it on everything.
And these country music, there's a bunch of clips of him on Spotify talking about, like, the country music documentary, like leading into, and then you listen to some songs. Like, they've got a whole thing there. It's their video podcasts, essentially. So I don't know if you've looked into that.
No, I haven't, but it's cool. But it brings up the point that we were talking about earlier in this episode and in the last episode with Paul Levinson, is that, yes, there's room for everything. There's room for Ken Burns, the master, to make a multi-part doc on whatever he wants. In this case, his most recent one is country music, but he's done jazz and he's done baseball and he's done lots of stuff. And then there's, you know, now the Robert Johnson doc. Look, if that's a Netflix doc, I haven't watched it yet, but if that's a Netflix doc, I'm assuming that's a pretty high quality one. If Netflix puts its brand on it, it's usually a higher quality, well-made one.
I think to Stace's point, they did something. They like remastered it. They did something to step it up a little bit.
Yeah. And then you have all of these ones that are like, Amazon's got a million of them.
Oh, God, yeah.
And some of them are poorly done. Like, but I'll still watch them. If it's about a band I like, I'll still watch it because, like, I'm hungry for it. And that's kind of my point.
Are you hungry like the wolf?
There is a Duran Duran one, I believe. I think it, you know, it's funny. I haven't watched that one, but you know what's funny is that I don't know if it's a doc. It might be more of a, like, a concert film of Duran Duran, because now I've watched so many music docs on Amazon that I just get flooded, which I'm happy to get flooded with whatever the new ones are, because I want to see them. And all this weird stuff that of, like, little artists or bands that I liked at one point or the other, I'm like, there's a documentary about Sam Bush, the bluegrass mandolin player. Okay. I'll start watching that. But there is one about Duran Duran, but it's made by David Lynch, like the director David Lynch, who does all those, like, weird movies and stuff.
Sure.
So I have no idea what that looks like. Yeah. Maybe David Lynch just likes Duran Duran and wanted to make a concert film, and that's it. Cause, like, I don't know, Scorsese does that too. You know, Scorsese will do, like,
he did a blues one. Yeah. He did one. And it was, you know, he focused on Allman Brothers, Eric Clapton, Mail and the Blues Breakers.
Oh yeah. John Mayall. Sure. That's where Clapton got his, or one of his starts, at least. Anyway. So Scorsese does that. Scorsese did that Dylan one that's on Netflix now. So some of these directors are just big music fans, and I think they want to, is Scorsese the Last Waltz too? The one about the band, I think that's maybe Scorsese as well. Yeah. So, but that's, again, that's what's great, is that you can get these big, huge heralded directors making them. And then you can get people that are probably not that much different than you and I, who are like, you know what, man, I love the Allman Brothers, and there isn't a doc about the Allman Brothers, so I'm going to make this doc. And I watched both of those Allman Brothers docs that are on Amazon. Did you watch either of those yet?
No. Uh-uh.
Yeah. And it's funny with that. The first one is called, I think it's called Song of the South or Song for the South. And that's all about Dwayne Allman, who died when he was 24. I didn't realize he died so early. Dwayne is on the first 2.5 Allman Brothers albums. So it's, the first doc is about Dwayne's tenure in the band. And the second one is everything post Dwayne Allman. And they had quite a career after that. And there's a big jump in quality from the first one to the second one. Like the first one was shot, I don't know how old it is, but it was, I don't think it's that old either, but it, the way it was shot, it wasn't widescreen. It doesn't fit on your whole TV. But the second one was, and you could tell it was the same makers, but you could tell they like updated their gear, you know, got better cameras, got better editing, had better sound. Like everything was better on the second doc. And that made me happy as a creative person to see that, because whoever the people that made these movies, they improved their craft. They pumped some money into their, you know, their resources to make better stuff. And I, you know, sometimes we look at a doc as just like, oh, this will be a fun little thing to watch or an interesting little thing. And like, there's an artistry to making a doc too. And I'm just always happy to see people doing creative things. So it's a good thing.
That reminds me, we talked about the Echo in the Canyon documentary.
Oh yeah. Still haven't gotten to that yet. That's another one on the queue there too.
How much do you use, or how little do you use Spotify anymore?
I don't use Spotify at all anymore because I use Google Play Music. Would, but I just don't right now.
So I still use Spotify. I still use the free version, which I know blows a lot of people away.
It does.
I pulled up the album that Jacob Dylan did with a bunch of other people, you know, in support of that, where they basically covered all those classic songs. And I listened to the album on Spotify. And what Spotify does is, you know, it'll take you through the album, and then it will start feeding you other songs based on, you know, what that album sounds like, right? Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. It just depends on what you're listening to. For me, it's been interesting because it's been two or more weeks since I watched that, and I pulled up the album on Spotify on my Spotify at work. And the songs and the music that it's been feeding me based on that album have been so good that I haven't switched to anything else. I've just been listening to all these random old songs and some new songs that it's just feeding me based on that sound of that very specific 67 to 69 kind of sound. And it's just been so interesting. And one day I'm sitting there and a song came up and I'm going, man, this guy sounds so familiar, whoever the singer is. And I'm looking at the band and I don't recognize the band name. And I'm like, who does this sound like? It sounded like Tom Petty. And I'm like, wow, whoever this is, they're pulling off the Tom Petty sound really, really good. Turns out it was Tom Petty. It was his first band, Mudcrutch.
Yeah, I was going to guess if it was Mudcrutch because I knew that was his first band.
I've never heard any music from Mudcrutch before, but I really liked it.
Now, was it an old recording? Because I think he, at one point, not that long before he passed away, he got Mudcrutch back together. And I feel like maybe they made an album as Mudcrutch. So did it sound like a modern recording, or did it sound like an old recording?
It sounded like a very young Tom Petty.
Okay. So it might have been, you know, 1974 or whatever it was. Tom Petty. And what was it like? Like, did it sound like a Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers record, or was it a different kind of sound?
No, it sounded like that California Laurel Canyon kind of folky rock kind of music.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Cause I mean, I know he liked that kind of stuff, and I know he was like a big, I think if I recall correctly, I think he was into all like the British Invasion stuff, which I guess
he was. Yeah.
So I think that doesn't surprised me that it had a bit of a different sound than what later kind of became his sound. So that's cool. Like, any other standouts from what kind of, you know, Spotify has been spitting out at you?
The Revivalists.
I'm not familiar with the Revivalists.
Which I posted one of their videos on the patrons page.
Okay.
So that came up, And that one I actually ended up writing down because I wanted to look it up some, you know, at some point. And what I ended up doing was, again, I didn't want to kill the flow that's coming out of Spotify right now. So I went to YouTube. And I plugged them in and I went to their channel and I just, you know, I hit play all on their songs. So that was really cool. I've been listening. So I was listening to that one day. I like them a lot.
Cool.
They kind of have a little bit of a Southern rock kind of thing going. It's right now it's difficult for me to define their music other than I like it.
Man, that's all you need sometimes.
Yeah.
It's funny, to a point about Spotify specifically, I met up, I was playing with this guy, Andy, about a year ago now. He's a keyboard player and he sang too. And he and I were getting together every week for about a year. We had stopped because when I had the flood in the house I was living in and we had to move out and all that, and I was living with my in-laws for 2 months.
Did we even talk about that on air?
I don't know if we did or not. Mentioned specifically. I moved.
I remember at the time you didn't want to talk about it on air because there were legal things happening.
There was, and that's all worked out, and it's all fine, and it's all in the past now. But essentially, you know, for listeners who are curious, there was an issue with the heating system in the house we were living in, and the house flooded, and it was a disaster, and it was we had to get out. Nothing was damaged, and we were fine. None of our stuff was damaged, but it was kind of a mess for a while, and anyway, so that got put on hold playing with Andy, and we didn't lose touch, but it was like about a month ago. I was like, man, it's been a year since I played with Andy, and we haven't even really talked in a while. So I reached out to him, and we got together for dinner, and it was nice. We'll probably start playing again at some point. He's an excellent musician, great keyboard player. So speaking of a sort of a Spotify specific thing, he was telling me he does all kinds of music, but he actually does this sort of solo piano, solo keyboard, instrumental music that, you know, one could throw in like the new age category, like the kind of relaxing, you know, I'm just going to put this on and it'll be in the background and I'll mellow out like that. There's a, you know, a lot of people like that kind of music. What he was telling me, because I'm like, yeah, I saw you posting about that. That's cool. It sounds good. So what he was telling me, a couple of really interesting things that I think have a lot to do with Spotify. I said like, oh, are you just putting that out on your own? Like I would have put out my music 10 years ago or whatever, you know, just make the album myself, put it, you know, use CD Baby and it'll get on all the streaming stuff. And he told me that, no, he is actually on like a little record label. And the reason why, and I thought this was really interesting, is because the guy that has this little record label, and I guess there's all these little businesses that do this now, you know, again, going back to Paul Levinson talking about all these little businesses that crop up to try to make money. But this company doesn't sound nefarious. The guy that has this record company has connections with all of the, you were talking about Spotify and how it'll spit back what you've been listening to. There's also all the playlists on Spotify, right? Like the ones that are ready made. And I remember from Spotify specifically, they had like music for working, relaxing music while you zone out.
They still do that.
Well, apparently like that's a big thing. And if you get songs on one of those big major lists, like that's kind of a big deal. So the reason why he sort of signed with this little record company is because that guy has connections with the people that make those lists. So he can get, you know, it's almost like you're paying somebody to try to get your song played on the radio. It's sort of a modern version of that. So my friend Andy, who has these, you know, solo piano, you know, new agey kind of instrumentals, he's gotten a few of his tracks placed on like the relaxing work for music, you know, music for work.
Sure.
And he gets way more plays than he would have if it's just like, I'm Andy and here's my song and my album. Listen to it. It's like, because people aren't going to search him out, or very few people are going to search him out. But if his song pops up in one of these playlists, he'll get all those plays. And then, you know, the hope, I guess, is always that someone's going to particularly like one of his tracks and then maybe go listen to his whole album. But either way, it's worthwhile to give up a little bit of money to the record company to get on these playlists. So I thought that was really interesting because I hadn't really thought about that before. I'm like, oh yeah, if you get on these playlists, that's especially for like an instrumental thing where people aren't, you know, they aren't thinking like, oh, I feel like listening to the Eagles or something. It's like, I just want something in the background that's not going to be too jarring or, and apparently there's a whole business around that. So I thought that was pretty interesting there.
So there's so much stuff to kind of unpack and talk about a little bit there. Spotify has added a product for recording and distribution. I don't know if you've seen any of this.
I have not, no.
And it's, what is it called?
Do you like record in the cloud or something?
Hold on, I'm clicking on something here. I've seen this a couple different times. There's a couple different versions of it. So they have a, what is this? Spotify for podcasters. This is, I think, different. This isn't the one I'm looking for. This is not the droid I'm looking for, which is another thing we need to talk about before the end of this episode, or else people are going to lose their mind. Soundtrap.
Oh, yeah, Soundtrap, I know Soundtrap.
That's called.
Did Spotify buy that?
They have, yeah. So it's your Everywhere Studio. And what they're doing is they have different, where is it? What are they calling this? So they have Soundtrap for podcasters, Soundtrap for music makers.
Okay.
And so what they're actually calling it is music makers, storytellers, and education. And you can use that. And yes, I believe it is all cloud-based, kind of like Zencastr.
Yeah.
To record your stuff, edit your stuff, and then push it out on the Spotify platform.
Interesting.
And they really started pushing this when they added podcasts.
I bet.
So when they added podcasts, and our podcast is not part of the Spotify podcast, and I can explain why in a moment. But they when they added that, the first thing was, you know, submit your existing podcast or your existing feed. Boom, you're on Spotify if you qualify. Or start a fresh podcast on Spotify using these tools. You can also do your music through there and record some stuff and push that out. So they're kind of doing like an indie artist sort of thing through Spotify, through the platform. The reason why we're not on Spotify podcasts is because you have to be pod safe.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And we are not.
No. Okay.
And the reason we're not is because, to be honest with you, our exit audio.
Oh,
is
right,
not
right.
Pod safe because I
gotcha.
Now, I can make the argument that it's fair use because all the clips are under a certain time frame.
Right.
So, you know, I can legally make that argument that we are safe. However, they just do an audio scan. They if they find any kind of material that they consider to be copyrighted, then they don't
want to deal with that.
They don't want it there. Yeah. So that's the reason why. If we wanted to change our outro or our ending or end cap thing, we'd probably be fine and could be out there.
Yeah.
That's just a lot of work on my end, and I don't feel like doing it. So
okay. Yeah, I gotcha. That's fine. You mentioned, so with Soundtrap, like I have used that at school. Soundtrap is almost, it's essentially cloud-based GarageBand. It is very similar to GarageBand. It's fine. I've used it before. It's okay. I could, if I taught older students, if I taught middle school kids or high school kids, I would probably use it a lot. I think it's pretty cool. But it's not something I would have time to do with my students. But that's interesting that they have that worked out there. Okay. I guess we do have to talk about Star Wars. We don't have to go long because I'm speaking. Yeah, but I guess it would be irresponsible of us to not talk about Star Wars and the Mandalorian. So maybe we can close out the episode with a little bit of Star Wars talk.
I have a question, and I feel like we've talked about this before. I know that people talk about this on the internet. I know that there's tons of arguments and all kinds of shit out there. I just want to ask the question: what is the point of stormtrooper armor? Really, I mean this in all sincerity. What's the point of stormtrooper armor?
It doesn't seem to do anything.
It doesn't protect them from anything. So why is it even called armor? Like, why couldn't it just be stormtrooper uniforms? I don't get it. I don't understand. It seems like a truly stupid thing.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid thing. Throughout the history of the Star Wars films, I feel like armor is just, it looks cool, but it's not functional.
Yeah, it's true.
And so the reason I bring this up is because in The Mandalorian, there is a scene where the Mandalorian gets shot by a blaster.
Yes.
And gets right back up. Kind of, you know, rubs his shoulder for a second and then starts killing stuff.
Yes.
Versus a stormtrooper gets shot in the shoulder.
Right.
Or in the leg or, you know, on a finger wearing their armor and instantly dies.
It's true. Yeah. It's funny that you bring that up. Yeah. That was a pretty noticeable scene. And they do make a big deal about the armor. What's Beskar, the name of the
Beskar?
That's right.
Beskar. Steel.
Yes. So yeah, there is the scene where he gets shot like full on in the chest and he falls down, but he gets right back up. So it's like, oh yeah, I guess that's good armor. I guess they're making the case that the Beskar is very rare and it's, you know, only the Mandalorians that have that, but.
And then later admits that his armor has been compromised and needs to be replaced.
Yeah. And you know, but come on, like the Empire had all those resources. They couldn't come up with better armor, whether it was Beskar or whatever. Like, yeah, no, I got you. I feel you. So, I have been enjoying The Mandalorian. As we're recording this, episode 3 is out. You have watched it. I have not. I have watched the first 2 episodes and enjoyed them quite a bit. Have not watched episode 3 yet. So, I mean, I guess at some point, if we want to do like a big breakdown of it, we can. We're not going to do it today because we're already sort of at the end of the episode. So we're not going to go into a scene by scene thing with it. I think you're enjoying it so far, too. But I don't know if you have any specific thoughts about what's going on with it. Obviously, no spoilers, particularly for episode 3, because I'll kill you. But if we want to keep it spoiler free for people who perhaps have not watched it yet, if you have any particular thoughts about it,
Talked about the issues with Disney Plus, with the actual platform.
Right, you had problems the first week or the first couple of days.
Both episodes I had problems with.
Okay.
The third. It seems like they've worked through whatever was happening.
Okay.
I had zero technical issues with the third episode. So that's good. I will also say that this is quite literally the only thing I'm watching on Disney Plus.
Right.
There is I'm not in the mood to watch the old Star Wars movies right now.
Right.
They have Clone Wars, they have Resistance, I think they have Rebels.
Right.
I'm not really in the mood to watch any of those right now, Star Wars-wise. As far as the Marvel stuff, it's like I'm not really in the mood. Like, I just watched Endgame not too long ago. I don't want to watch it again. I don't need those feels.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not – it's not my fandom to watch High School Musical, the musical, the series.
What? Come on. That was awesome. I don't know why you're – No, I got well. So I'm assuming you paid for.
I did watch Steamboat Willie.
Okay, I'm assuming you paid for 1 month.
Yeah,
and then you're gonna decide if you want. I mean, I guess you could pay for it month to month and watch the whole Mandalorian, and then just get rid of it at the end of that. I suspect a lot of people do that. I paid for a year up front. You're right. As much as Disney has. it's limited in terms of their, when you compare it to a Netflix or an Amazon, because it is just things that they own. You know, I have, you know, with my son, like, it's like all the Pixar stuff is there. Look, you can make the argument here too, is that many people who are fans of this stuff probably own a lot of the things that they would watch anyway. Like, I own all the Star Wars movies already. And like, I own a couple of the Marvel movies. And I know some people buy every single Pixar and
McCloskey.
Disney movie. McCloskey?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if you know, like, you're right. They already own these movies. And the version of A New Hope that's up
is
apparently another one that's been tweaked again by George Lucas to add an extra line to Greedo in the Greedo Han Solo that is unintelligible and no one understands what it means, but it sounds like he's saying McCloskey.
I heard it's McClunky. That's what I heard.
Or McClunky, something like that. Yeah. Whatever the fuck it is. It's like, stop.
Yeah. So I think it is limited, and I think that is certainly probably one of the reasons why they're releasing The Mandalorian week to week, and I'm assuming they're probably going to do that with most of their shows. To kind of keep people there. And I'm okay with that. I mean, I would prefer to watch it all in one shot, but there's something to be said about it week to week and having that new episode to look forward to. So I'm okay with that too.
Not only that. So let's talk about that for a second. Let's break that down. I shared a Forbes article about The Witcher.
Yes, I saw that.
And The Mandalorian, where the author said Netflix should follow in The Mandalorian's footsteps and in the HBO footsteps with Game of Thrones and release The Witcher one episode a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm against that. I think you're against that. But Mark Boder, one of our patrons who was talking about that on the page, he says, like, look, and I think he had a very valid argument about this. He said, look, it's really good and fun and interesting when you get an episode and then everybody talks about the episode.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, back and forth and community and everybody's, oh my God, did you see this? Did you blah, 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 blah. And there's a lot of discussion about that episode and then anticipation for the next episode. And when the next episode drops, it all happens again. And so if you have a 10 to 12 episode season, that is, you know, 2.5 months of people talking about that show. It has a longer tail effect, right? It's like a marketing thing. It's the long tail, talking about that show over several weeks or a couple of months. You know, he pointed that out with The Mandalorian. He pointed that out with Star Trek Discovery and some of the shows over there. So I think that is a valid point. Versus, you drop a show all at once, everybody talks about it all at once, and then within a week or two, people stop talking about it and it just kind of goes away.
I think he's right.
A valid argument.
I think he's right. Yeah. I kind of agree with it, even though it's not necessarily the way that I like to do it, but let's look at Stranger Things, that Netflix show, their biggest show, obviously, that dropped over the summer. I watched it, enjoyed it, probably picked it. I'm not sure. I remember talking about it with people, but even compared to the earlier seasons of that got a lot of buzz for a couple weeks, and then that was it. Where they could have done that, where I think it was about 10 episodes that was in that. Yeah, they could have stretched that out for 2.5 months, and maybe that would have been better for them to do that. But I think something would have to really change within Netflix for them to do that, because that is their thing. That I think they are committed to always. I don't think they've ever done weekly. I don't think so. Unless it's like those weird deals where they don't really do it in the US, but I think with some like UK things, like they'll release shows week to week. But I think for the most part, it's always boom, it's all there. I think that's like their model, and that's what they're going to stick to for the time being.
I feel like the only things that they have dropped week to week have been their experiments with talk shows.
Oh, and yes, you're right.
Like
you're right.
The McHale show that you like.
Yes, I did, and they canceled that.
Yeah.
So there you go.
You know, stuff like that they've kind of experimented with. I think it's a know your audience kind of thing.
Yeah.
Netflix has trained us to expect everything all at once. Here it yeah. all is. We're dropping it.
Yeah.
These other platforms are very focused on retaining subscribers, you know, yeah. for the subscription fees. So I think Netflix is going off of the we have so much content, you'll stay a yes. Netflix subscriber. These yes. other channels are going, we have one show, it's an event. We're going to stretch it out for 2.5 months and get 3 months worth of subscription from you.
I think so. And you know, to use the example of Disney Plus, I don't know what their release schedule is exactly, but I would have to assume that. So you have The Mandalorian, which is going to be going on for another, however many weeks, month and a half, whatever it is. I would guess that they're going to have another big ticket series that's going to launch on the heels of The Mandalorian ending, whether it's, you know, whatever it is. I don't know.
I believe it's Mary Poppins Goes to Mars.
Wow. Sweet. Or a big movie that they don't have
just
up there yet.
Just a spoonful of potatoes help the medicine go down.
So I think, you know, they're going to have to do that until they build up a bigger, you know, catalog of things. Because, yeah, you're right. I mean, look, I just paid for the whole year because, you know, there's all the Disney and Pixar. And it's not expensive if you pay for it for the year. You do. It ends up being like $6 a month or something. So it's fine by me. And like we've talked about a zillion times, like I don't have cable and everything. So I'm fine budgeting that. But yeah, I can. So I'm watching Star Wars Resistance now because I had not watched that yet. And that's okay. It's not Rebels or Clone Wars. It's not at that level. It's getting better with each episode.
Mark says it gets better. So
yeah, well, it's perfectly watchable. It's a Star Wars show. It's fine. I'm enjoying it fine. It's not as good as Rebels, but I knew that.
I'm wondering if the new season of Clone Wars drops after The Mandalorian.
It might. I'm not sure how long it'll be, but I know that's coming too. Mm. So, yes, but so to your point, though, once I get through Resistance and once The Mandalorian finishes its run, there's nothing. I'll probably watch some Marvel movies. Like, I haven't rewatched Endgame yet since I only saw it in the theater the one time. There may be some. I'm sure there's some movies up there that I'd want to watch, or maybe some old series, possibly. But my guess is that Dragon Prince is over at Netflix. I'm going to go to that pretty soon. Like, once I'm done with the Resistance, I'll go and start watching Dragon Prince, and then The Witcher's coming, like you said, and you know, X, Y, and Z. So it's the thing we always talk about. It depends on what you want to watch, and you're probably going to move back and forth between several of the platforms, but it is going to get to the point where, as a consumer, you're probably going to make decisions like, well, how much Hulu am I actually watching? Do I need to pay for Hulu every month? Maybe I don't need Hulu right now. Or, yeah, I watched The Mandalorian and I liked it, but, you know, I'm only interested in the Star Wars live action stuff, and the next one of those isn't going to be around for a year. So I'll just, you know, I'll cancel that subscription. And when that comes around, I'll do that. I think you're going to see people do that, but if it's compelling enough, then people will keep going. So I don't know. I think that's where it's at. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I don't disagree with you in terms of the content. It's not as much there as one might think.
I think it's going to be close to impossible for me, given our community, to wait and try to binge The Mandalorian.
No, you'll get spoiled. Like, I mean, look, even the, I won't even mention it because
the big reveal in the first episode hit Twitter as a GIF, within hours, and I just remember seeing it in my Twitter feed, not knowing what it was, because I was at work.
You saw it before you watched the episode.
I saw that little GIF, and I'm like, "What the hell is that?" It didn't connect to me what it was, and then when I saw the episode, I went, "Oh, now I get it."
But
so, like,
you know,
it's impossible, I think, to avoid stuff at this point.
Yeah, because even if you're trying to avoid it, because And to me, I didn't see I saw the episode before I saw anything online about it. And it was such a nice moment. It was such a like, mm-hmm. That's sure. great. Like, so, and I'm giving it away by the tone of my voice right there.
I know, but, right?
but I would have been upset if I saw that beforehand. I would have been pissed off that I got spoiled on that. So, yeah. So that's, so as of now, sitting here, you know, the episode 3 just launched yesterday, and it's like, well, I can't really look on Facebook or in any of my feeds because I'm gonna get spoiled on something.
Yeah,
I just got a text from my friend saying like episode 3 is awesome, so so like, all right, I gotta watch it today because I can't, you know, go online until I watch it because I don't want to get spoiled on anything. So
after you watch it, my question, well, no, I can't even ask you the question.
No, don't
I
ask
can't
it
ask
to
you
me,
the
no.
question because it spoils
I'll,
it
I'll text you when I'm
yeah,
done watching.
Yeah, please do, because I have a question for you. I have a question for you about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's impossible. It's impossible not to be spoiled on certain things anymore.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because there's a guy at work. There's two guys at work. And one of them is just a massive Star Wars fan, and the other guy, you know, he's a huge Star Wars fan. And even the non-Star Wars fans have watched The Mandalorian. Already, mm-hmm. like they've gotten Disney Plus at work and watched it. The one guy has not, and mm-hmm. it comes down to his wife. Mm-hmm. Like his wife has not approved the expenditure, and and he's like, "Honey, we have a kid. It's not a waste. Like we need to." But the problem is, it's like the rest of us want to talk about The Mandalorian, and specifically that thing that you and I are dancing around that happened in, you know, the big reveal, mm-hmm. And we can't if he's around. And so we're constantly like looking over our shoulders. Oh, is he here? Is he here? Because if he is, we can't talk about this.
Yeah.
And we keep telling them, it's like, just watch the damn show. Like, go get it. Go. Well, I can't. You know, my wife, you know, we're talking about it and about, oh my God. So yeah, that's really difficult. I just don't know what to do with that at this point.
Yeah.
I will tell you that, a lot of people were upset that Disney's merchandising machine did not catch up with episode 1 of The Mandalorian. And I just did read an article that they are about to pump out shit.
Yeah.
Like you cannot believe about that.
Oh, I'm sure.
It reminds me of a certain scene in Guardians of the Galaxy where people were like, okay, where's my merchandise? And they're like, oh yeah, we don't have any yet. Let us work on that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll see it sooner than later. Okay, well, we're over an hour now, so I guess we should wrap it up. I'm sure we'll do more Star Wars Mandalorian talk in future Just the Two of Us episodes, so stay tuned, people. Everybody, thanks for listening, and specific thanks to our backers over at Patreon, patreon.com/functionalnerds. We really appreciate it. If you dig the show, consider becoming one of our backers. You can become part of that Facebook group like we were talking about, and we're now doing that thing where we read patrons' picks of the week. So if that's something, right now there's enough people on there where I can kind of read everybody's right now. I don't know if that's always going to be the case. We're probably going to have to, hopefully it'll grow to the point where I don't, but as of right now, I want to read everybody because we want to hear from you guys. So if that's something that appeals to you, become one of our backers, then you can get on that page, and Patrick posts lots of stuff, and I post some stuff, and the members of the group post stuff, and it's about what we talk about on the show. So if you dig the show, that's just sort of a day-to-day version. You could sort of check in over there. So patreon.com/functionalnerds. And that is that. Patrick, what do you want to leave our listeners with before we go?
I want to say kudos to the actor playing the Mandalorian.
Yes.
For keeping the helmet on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's lots of other reasons to give them kudos, but for keeping the helmet on, that's huge, especially in Hollywood. You know, one of my pet peeves has always been how superheroes especially in the Marvel movies spend more time without their mask than they do with their mask. Which, you know, in the comics, they're constantly like, it's like a stressful thing for them. They have to keep the mask on because they have the secret identity and they don't want people to know. And in the movies, it's always, you know, the actor has to show their face.
Right, right. Yeah.
So kudos to them, you know, for keeping that helmet on. That's huge. I'm really impressed with that. You know, good for them. It reminds me of the Judge Dredd movie with McCoy in it.
Yeah, Carl Urban. Yeah,
from Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, because he kept the helmet on the whole time, unlike Sylvester Stallone, who I don't think ever wore it.
Maybe
like 2 minutes in the movie. I don't know. So yeah, there's that. And then this episode may or may not drop the week of Thanksgiving. depending on what John and I talk about after we hit stop. So if it's before Thanksgiving in America, hey, everybody have a great Thanksgiving. And if it's after Thanksgiving in America, hey, everybody wake up. Get out of your turkey-induced coma and listen to the episode.
All right, everyone. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.